mean, that's a pretty wide.
Did you hear that the Bend people have Carl Rove?
I called one of my rural healthcare providers. I didn't actually speak to him, but his message to my LA was,
we are in session. Call the House Committee on Healthcare to order. Announce that we are carrying over Senate Bill 1047 until tomorrow. And open a work session on Senate Bill 1003. And I asked Ms. Miller, who's getting all kinds of good write-ups from everywhere around the country on the work they're doing, to come and talk to us. Give us the background on this association bill, where it came from, and give us a little information on it. And then after that, I have proposed an amendment for us to consider. And I'll ask some folks to come up and talk to us about the amendment. And perhaps, have you seen the amendment as well?
I have.
I want to comment on this as well, but let's have general background stuff first.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Teresa Miller. I'm the administrator of the Insurance Division at the Department of Consumer and Business Services. In terms of the background for this bill is before you because we ended up with some associations who were not meeting the 95% retention rate retention requirement, which is in the law today. And so we had several insurers and associations approach us and say, we're concerned about this because if we don't meet this requirement, we're going to have to go back and be and comply with small group rating laws. So, and because initially the 95% requirement was in the law to prevent cherry picking, what we heard from groups was, look, that's not going on here, so we'd like to have some flexibility in the law. Currently, there is no flexibility in the law, so from our perspective, if that 95% retention rate is not met, they just get bumped back into small group rating laws, and we don't really have the ability to do anything about that. So the question, I think, for the committee that this bill raises is...
Okay, could you go back, though? I mean, I don't think we all know exactly why there is an association bill and what the structure is, what it does, what it means to have an associated health plan. That's
so, Mr. Chair, I prepared just a little bit of information about associations generally and our role in association health plans. So association health plans offer coverage to members of an association who are often small employers. These plans can be offered by insurers through associations like AOI or Associated General Contractors, for example. Insurers can only offer group health insurance policies to associations that meet certain requirements. And this is, we're not talking about exemption from small group rating laws now. All we're talking about is for an insurer to offer a group health insurance policy to an association, certain requirements have to be met. And we make sure those requirements are met. The association has to be in existence for at least a year. They must have a constitution and bylaws, and they must have been organized and maintained in good faith primarily for purposes other than providing insurance. So those are kind of the basics of what the association, the criteria that the association must meet. We currently have 26 associations that are approved to be issued association health plans. 22 of those associations have claimed exemption from small group rating laws. And now we get into the issue of association health plans that want to be exempt from small group rating laws have to meet additional criteria that are aimed at preventing cherry picking. And some of those criteria include the association health plan can't exclude any small group employers that meet membership requirements. Membership requirements can't be based on the actual or expected health status of individuals or prospective enrollees. The premiums for the new small group members for the initial year of membership have to be within the 3-to-1 rate band across the groups of small employers in the plan. And for renewals, premiums are not limited to the 3-to-1 rate band, and they can be based on claims experience, but the association plan overall has to meet the 95% retention rate requirement. So again, as I mentioned before, the 95% retention rate requirement is one of a series of other requirements intended to prevent against cherry picking. It's not the only requirement in the statute, but it's one of them.
Teresa, you keep talking about cherry picking.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see anything in the statute about cherry picking.
Mr. Chair, the term cherry picking is not used in the statute. What I just described are requirements that association health plans have to meet that are aimed at preventing cherry picking. So the term cherry picking is not used in the law.
Well, I'm not sure that's all they were aimed at. I mean, and that's
I think that's the point. It seems to me we put a structure in place. Mm-hmm. There were things like, for example, you don't have to stick to the 3-to-1 in the renewal. You can go to experience rating, mm-hmm. which small group business can't mm-hmm. go to experience rating. So in some sense, the 95% isn't, in my mind, to protect against so-called cherry picking. The 95% is there to protect the people that are in the plan from rate increases that they otherwise wouldn't face if they were in the small group market. And if, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's the good ones that are going or the bad ones that are going, it affects the basic structure of the exclusionary rate. I mean, otherwise they'd all be in the small group business. What's the difference between an association plan in terms of their rating and the small group market?
Well, association health plans can be rated in different ways. They essentially have three options. They can be rated as a large group plan, so the association is just a large group and treated as a large group for purposes of rates. Or for the small employers that are part of the association, they can comply with small group rating laws, or they can be exempt from small group rating laws, just like we've talked about. So there's a couple different options.
Anybody else want to get into this discussion? I feel lonesome here. Why I'm really raising this issue is that we put together a deal mm-hmm. in 2007, and there were a bunch of structural issues around that kind of perspective. And now, I mean, it seems we're pulling one of the props out from under that original structure. And what it seems to me we need to grapple with is the extent to which there's a useful social policy that comes from changing it at this point in time mm-hmm. in this particular way.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you could comment on that. I mean, what if they can't meet the 95%?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think part of the issue is, one of the questions is, where did the 95% number come from? I don't think there was any magic to the 95% number. So, again, I think from the division's perspective, the issue was to make sure that there wasn't some sort of cherry picking going on, or that associations were somehow finding a way to get rid of the bad risk and only keep the good risk. And I think that was the primary reason for the 95% retention requirement. So from the department's perspective, when we were approached by associations and insurers who were concerned that some of these groups weren't meeting that retention rate, my concern was, initially they said, we just want to get rid of the 95% retention rate. My response was, I'm not comfortable with that because I think it serves a purpose. But if we're going to allow the department to review what's going on before we grant a waiver from that 95%, and if we can look at the medical loss ratios of those employer groups who are leaving, compare it to those that are staying. If we can look at the issues we would look at to determine whether or not there was some sort of cherry picking going on, then I feel much more comfortable about being able to waive that requirement, because I'm not going to waive that requirement if there's some sort of cherry picking going on.
You keep talking about cherry picking. Let me make the case that the opposite is just as important. Let me make the case that if an association moves all its good risks over to individual cover, I mean over an individual contract, and it's frequently the same insurers, right, that are handling both sides of that.
Okay.
You then have the ability to uprate the people who are left, who could conceivably be in the small group market, but instead they're in a place where their rates might double because all the good risks have gone away.
So I'm trying to figure out, Mr. Chair, why an association would want to do that. Well, I guess I'm not.
Well, why would the business that's purchasing it stay in the association plan if your scenario was true?
Well, where would they go?
Out on the small group market, and whatever they buy, whatever plan. I mean, you're going to go the path of least resistance.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in an association plan because, you know, they're buddy-buddy. Let's say it's just you and me in an association, and they're going to rate our plan based on your experience. I'm probably not going to buy the plan that's just you and me.
Let's say just you and me. For example, let's say just you and me decide we want to have an association plan. Why? Well, because there are advantages to having an association plan. So it's just you and me. She says, yeah, you can have an association plan as long as it's both you or me. But you can't have an association plan if it's only me or if it's only you, because that's a 50% retention rate. So what we're saying now is, well, okay, yeah, we did say that, but now we don't say that anymore. So we can have an association plan whether you leave or I leave, or I suppose whether we both leave. And I'm talking to, is there some reason, is there some advantage to association plans? And I believe there are. There's a whole set of advantages to association plans that were intended to be put in place when we were both in the association. And I have an amendment that we talked about that says, okay, how about 75%? I mean, you know, 95% isn't accidental. 95% is not 10%. It's an order of magnitude difference, and it was like, okay, almost every, he and I both stay in. And that's where the 95%, it could have been, if it had been 25%, it would have been a very different discussion we're having here, I think.
What if I'm somewhat lost. I have to apologize in what your real motive, I mean, putting a floor on it, I think.
What my motive is, we're not talking about motives.
No. Well, no, motive is not the right
thing. I'll be happy to share my motive. I'm worried about the small group market. And this is essentially an exception to the small group market. This drains people off the small group market that otherwise would be in the small group market. And it draws them off because they have some reason to want to be drawn off. And I'm worried not only about the effect on, I'm less worried about the effect on the association, I'm worried about what effect this has on the small group market. And that's what I'm probing.
How many people are we talking about? Or how many lives are in association plans versus the small group?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, when we capture the information on associations, we capture that information along with trusts. And so I would have to go back. I don't know that I can actually tell you exactly how many people are in the association market because, again, associations and trusts are reported together. But I will tell you, in terms of the number of lives that are...
Can I tell you?
What?
Can I tell you, since that was a loaded question? There are 222,000 in association plans.
And trusts, right?
And it doesn't say that. I'm reading your book.
Uh-huh. It's associations and trusts.
Okay.
And just to be clear, that all of those 222,000 lives, those are not all exempt from small group rating. Some of those associations are going to be rated as large groups. My sense is, and I think I can get exact numbers, but I don't have them right now. I think a fairly small percentage of the 222,000 are actually exempt from small group rating laws.
So the small group coverage, the number they have or you have for small group coverage is 254,000.
Right.
Those aren't double counted, correct?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you see that?
Yeah, you said essentially 250,000 roughly in both sides.
220, 250. So it's relatively even, but there's also a split between trust and association and exceptions.
Right. So, Mr. Chair, just to be clear, those 222,000 lives, so those are not all, in fact, I think most of those are not exempt from small group rating laws. Some of those are trusts, and some of them are associations rated as large groups. So they're not necessarily, there's not 222,000 lives out there exempt from the small group rating laws.
How many are we talking about roughly?
Mr. Chair, I don't have the exact numbers, and I would hate to guess.
It's not a trivial amount.
Is 10,000 a trivial amount?
Compared to 225, it is.
And I'm sorry, I don't have the exact number.
What about the 75? What about the -1 amendments that you've had a chance to see? What's your view on them?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it depends on what the committee is trying to achieve. If the committee is trying to address the concerns that you heard from some of the folks who testified the other day in terms of giving the department flexibility to waive this requirement, the bill as is would take care of that. if you want to set some other standard, like they have to meet at least a 75% retention rate before we can even go to the department to get a waiver, you can do that. The question is, which groups are you trying to help? We do have some groups that, when I look at the numbers, don't meet that 75%. So if you just want to help those groups that meet that 75%, then that amendment gets you there. I'm not sure, quite frankly, what the policy rationale might be for implementing the 75%, but that's your call, not mine. And I'm happy to let you make it.
Tell me what you think the policy rationale is for the original bill.
Again, Mr. Chair, I think the 95% rate requirement was put in the original bill to address potential cherry picking. If we are determining, if we're able to make that determination that that's not happening, then I feel comfortable with waiving the 95% retention rate requirement.
Representative Thompson and Representative Hoyle.
It seems to me that what we're really dealing with here is just flexibility. I mean, we don't have to change the 95%. We're just saying if in the study judgment of the commissioner there is good reason to exempt the 95%, we're going to go that way. So there's some flexibility in the system for special occasion as opposed to you meet the 95% or you're out. And obviously I assume from this we could call the commissioner at any time we wanted to for a report on exactly what that involves and, you know, do a slap down if we need to. But to me it seems like this maybe solves the problem of getting some flexibility, and I assume the rules that are going to be written under this would have some sideboards that if this and this and this happens, then we could grant an exception. But my problem isn't with the 95%. My problem is with the lack of flexibility if someone, for good reason, can't meet 95%. What's the reason? Put it on the table and then grant an exception. But we could keep the 95% standard as kind of a target for everybody who can meet it.
Well, we did hear what the reason was. The reason was they're finding cheaper rates somewhere else. I mean, if it's other reasons, they're exempt from that 95%. You know, if they stop paying the dues, there are a whole set of things in the bill that doesn't count. So the main thing that's counting is if they, the other people selling them insurance have a better rate. I mean, I think that's what we heard in the testimony, though we can check in. I'm going to ask Sean and Betsy to come and talk to us before we're done again today, too. But I think that's the reason.
I'm just a flexible kind of guy. I like flexibility.
I know that. I've noticed that from your voting record. It's not flexible.
So under the current bill, as written, you'd evaluate these exceptions on a case-by-case basis and, you know, to make sure that this isn't cherry-picking. What are the criteria would you use to determine whether you would exempt these groups or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoyle, we've talked about just internally, and we would go through a public rate-making process, so we would certainly get input from folks, but we've talked about a couple of different things in terms of establishing standards that we would use to evaluate these waiver requests. One thing we would be looking at is what I mentioned earlier, the loss ratios of the small employer groups remaining in the association, as well as the loss ratios of those groups who leave the association. And what we're looking for there is, are all the unhealthy groups leaving and all the healthy groups staying? And so that would be one thing. The second thing is the reasons the small employers left. Did they leave because they were facing a huge rate increase? Why did they leave? That could be an indication. If they're leaving because they were facing a huge rate increase, that could be an indication of cherry picking. Another thing we would look at is the rate increases, which kind of gets to the second point, the rate increases facing the small employers that left versus those facing the small employers that remain. And I think we'd have some sort of catch-all that would say, you know, any and all reasons that the associate or that the health plan failed to meet the retention requirement. So, and again, I'm certainly open to looking at other things, but I think in terms of determining whether or not there's some sort of cherry picking going on, those are some of the things that we would be looking at.
So can I follow up?
Please.
All right. So the bill as written would give you the flexibility to determine all of these things, not only are they cherry picking, is this good for the people that are left, is this good for the people that did leave, why did these people leave, so that would it would allow you to use your discretion as the insurance commissioner to make that decision or have your people make that decision.
That's
right?
Correct.
Okay, and then I have another. What industries, what associations did you, you said you looked at the data, what associations fell below that 75% predominantly? Are they one type of industry, one type of business, one type of association?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoyle, I'll just give you some examples. Associated Technologies Council was one, Agribusiness Council of Oregon, Independent Electrical Contractors of Oregon, Oregon School Employees Association, High Desert Education Service District. So those are some of them that didn't meet the 95% retention rate.
OSEA is an association?
OSEA is an association. So, health plan.
So it sounds to me that all but one. That, I mean, that that's surprising. That one, OSEA, that's surprising. But all of those other industries are industries that have suffered really major job losses. So there are exceptions. So if somebody stops paying their dues to the association, they're not counted against that whole. But if somebody is not paying for their insurance but still paying dues to the association, would that be covered under the exemption? Or
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoyle, I think that was taken care of in the bill before you.
Okay.
Correct?
Yeah,
yes.
I think one of the things that I've heard from the advocates for the bill is that they think they haven't necessarily looked back at all the legitimate exceptions to calculate some of these things.
Okay.
That the rates would look a little better if they carefully went out. How wide was that range? I mean, was it down to 30% or?
50% was the lowest range, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
May I be excused?
Yeah, anything else you want to talk to us about?
This is fun.
Why don't you hang in if you have a moment?
Okay.
Let's ask Sean Miller and Betsy Earls to come in.
We're just one great big family.
You know, I just enjoy the time we get to spend together.
I know you do, and you're going to be so lonely after the 1st of March.
I really am. I will miss you all.
You had a chance to look at, are they, I think the dash ones, are they?
Yes, Mr. Chair, for the record, Betsy Earls representing Associated Oregon Industries, and we have looked at the dash ones, indeed. Would you like to hear what we think of them?
Yeah, that'd be great.
That too.
If you're willing to share with us.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, I think I understand at least partly where you were going with the dash ones in an attempt to put some sideboards on the discretion of the administrator. But I am not sure that putting in an arbitrary number, 75% retention rate, before somebody can even approach the administrator to ask for a waiver is, I don't know that that's going to fulfill the need that we have very well. I think we could get awfully close to 75%, and that concerns me.
For your association particularly?
Indeed.
But how about as a general policy issue?
You know, Mr. Chair, I think that if you're going to allow an opportunity to, for the administrator to have flexibility, I'm not sure why you would put a floor on that.
So then you ought to see the question of whether we should give him the, give her the flexibility or not.
Maybe
you should give it to her.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Sean Miller.
That's an easy decision.
Yeah, I'm here today on behalf of the Associated Builders and Contractors and the Independent Electrical Contractors, two groups that did fall below that 95% retention rate and were plans were in jeopardy. And I do have one group for 1 year that did fall below the 75%. And again, that's the construction industry, like I explained at the last hearing. I know AGC is not here too, but the construction industry was hit very hard, obviously, in this recession. And there is a number of examples, and I can't even list all the examples of why people leave, because there's just so many of them. And it's not just because they got a better rate. There's just a lot of different issues. And so this particular to the dash one amendments and the 75% floor, again, when we approached the division late last year with this problem of, you know, what are we going to do if we lose our plan? Because when we quoted many of the members, most of the members, they were going to be receiving very significant rate increases, and we didn't want to, at least for, you know, our concern was to disrupt the market in this economic times, and I think the rest of the construction industry with associations would agree with me there. And so when we approached the division, and again, realizing, I think your initial question, Mr. Chair, was cherry picking is not in the law, and you're absolutely right, but the discussion around cherry picking was the 95% retention rate was put in statute as that trigger, and when you fall below there. So what we did is we actually handed over all of our reasons. And if you go through the historical from the last 2 years and you have the division analyze that, the fundamental question is, do you think we were cherry picking? And again, this was one of the associations that fell below 75% in the floor, and the answer was no. You did everything fine. And so then it gets back to your fundamental question is, are we cannibalizing the small group market if you're falling under that? And the answer was no. And so then I guess then the question was, okay, how do we have some flexibility? And we felt that giving the rulemaking authority to DCBS with the criteria that Teresa mentioned would at least allow her to look at that and again achieve the same objective of not allowing cherry picking, and that is essentially, you know, keeping your good risk and letting your bad risk go to the small group market, and so cannibalizing that market, which I know is a concern of yours, Mr. Chair. And I guess the question is, if we got a determination back that that's not the problem, then I don't see why we need the -1 amendment. But I understand your concern about sideboards, and I think the sideboards that we rested on in this bill was to give the rulemaking authority to the division. And I guess, you know, to get back to your possible concerns there, I mean, we're obviously open to go through that rulemaking period and evaluate how it works, see what happened, and come back next session. But to the -1 amendments, you know, my only concern would be the one association I represent that does fall below that floor and would not be helped by the bill, even though it was determined that they were not cherry picking. And so that's the issue that's before us.
Would you explain to us why the ones that were left would have such a high rate increase when they could have gone into the small group market? And what caused that? Three times as high a rate or whatever you said.
Mr. Chair, I, and it depends on the company, but you know, not all people that stay in the association would probably receive a rate. I guess you asking the question of when the health insurance company re-rated those that were in our association plan, and if we lost that plan, it went away, they'd have to go into the small group health plan. They rated those same companies in the small group plan, and the majority of our members would have received pretty significant rate increases. And I guess, you know, from my standpoint, you got to understand from the association, we're in the middle. You know, the company is the one that's rating it. They, as you mentioned before, Mr. Chair, we have the association plans. They also cover the small group plans. But I think you are concerned with those folks leaving. If it's a cheaper rate to the small group plan, which you asked that question, they naturally go.
They go.
And they can go anytime. They do.
But why would the others be more expensive, three times as expensive than the small group market is staying in the plan? This is the same companies rating them on the same factors. I mean, isn't the small group market factors the same?
Mr. Chair, it's a different group, and so it's dependent on the group.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, if you go, in my testimony, I actually included some of the information, but the small group rating laws require pooling of small employers, so the associations would be pooled separately from small group rating, and of course you have the 3-to-1 rate band and the limited factors, so it would be different. The rating would be different.
Okay. Other questions?
I take it you don't like the -1s.
We would prefer the bill.
Mr. Chair, my only pushback is in the testimony in the last meeting is 95%. I was given the impression that we had a few companies falling just a few percentage points below 95%. Now we've got companies that are way below 75%.
These aren't companies, these
associations. Or excuse me, association, I apologize. Associations. And so it would have been a little more helpful to know the magnitude. I'm sure they have really good reasons. Construction companies would be hit really hard, and that's justifiable, but.
Well, would they, why would they be necessarily hit hard? Because they might stop providing health insurance, but that, would that count against the association? I think it wouldn't. Maybe the original statute.
I think the answer is yes.
They would still count. They stopped providing health insurance. They would still count as a, not as a part of the retention. They wouldn't fall into those exemptions.
Well, here's the.
There are.
These are the reasons that they wouldn't be counted in the
9 different exemptions or something.
No, it's on.
Let's do 5. 6. 6.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, in the existing statute, those exemptions from the 95% retention rate are employer groups that go out of business. They no longer meet the eligibility requirements for membership in the association. They no longer meet participation requirements for employers, and they fail to pay premiums.
What's that third one mean to you? Participation. They no longer meet participation requirements.
Eligibility requirements. Participation requirements, right?
Okay. Does that mean a certain proportion of the group has to be in the, must be, has to be.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well.
Representative
Kennemer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think you make a good point. It would be nice to put some sideboards, but I think we don't have enough data to be able to do that. And my suggestion is we're going to be back here in a year. And we had testimony that one group was exceeding 75%. I just think, why don't we give them a year? If it's not done well, or if there's, you know, we should have some more data and opportunity to appraise what's happening. And I don't think, in light of what this market really deals with, a year is not a dramatic amount of time for the world to end. It's a time to just see where it goes and reconsider it when we have some better data and some more opportunity to discuss it thoroughly.
We had a pretty thorough discussion right now.
Well, I agree, but I mean, we don't know where to set. Your point about 75 is relatively arbitrary, and that's my, I mean, you know, it could be 50, it could be 82. I just think, you know,
pick one.
Well, I would probably pick 56 just to be arbitrary about it. I mean, it's low enough that it gives flexibility, and then I think we ought to have some accountability about how that flexibility is dealt with.
Yeah. There's no question in my mind, if we could put more rational sideboards on it,
yeah,
that would be what we want to do. But the question is, we want to know why the sideboards.
Yeah.
And that gets back to why the 95. I mean, it's the... Okay. Thank you all very much. We'll be back tomorrow.
You can take your dead horse and stop beating it.
I haven't even gotten off it yet. Why should I stop beating it? No, I'm still on my dead horse.
Right.
That was a work session. I'd set it till 10:03. Carry this over until tomorrow. We'll have time tomorrow, and everybody will be here to deal with both bills. At least I hope everybody will be here. Tomorrow is going to be our last day. Are we starting information meetings tomorrow as well?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We have Teresa Miller up to go over the report.
The book.
The book.
Yeah.
The report for tomorrow. In addition to our bills.
And you might want to just glance at that in advance of tomorrow, but if not, it'll be fun to read along with Ms. Miller. It's as Representative Maurer said, a very exciting reading.
It is.
Keep you up all night.
It is. I look forward to it every year.
Let's just talk about what we're going to do also Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So we have information meetings all 3 days, if we're here, all 3 days.
Thank you for that caveat.
Yeah, if we're here all 3 days, we have information meetings all 3 days. Monday, we're looking at the hospital-acquired infection process and how that's going, and we'll have a report also from Legacy. It's done some interesting things in reducing hospital-acquired infections. Something else that day as well? Oh, yeah, and there's been a movement of the physical therapists to get involved in what some people call acupuncture, what they call dry needle therapy. I'd be interested to hear from the board and how they're managing that one. So that will be, I think, relatively brief. Wednesday, we'll have three different health insurance executives continuing our discussion on the nature of health insurance. Steve Zatkin, Kaiser's legal affairs director. Ken will be with us, is that right? Ken Provencher.
From the chief operating
officer. Okay, and Jack Friedman from Providence will be here to talk about that. We'll have 2 hours to give them enough time to share their views. We tried to get Kerry Barnett to do it. We've been unsuccessful, but there'll still be time if he wants to come in and talk about that or somebody else. Continuing on your interim, it seems to us that's a useful thing. Thursday, we have, if we're still here, what do we have for Thursday?
Presentation by Upstream Public Health Group. I'm not sure all the details.
Talk about issues in public health. And Representative Nathanson's asked OPDP to come and talk to us. As long as we're still here Thursday, we'll ask them to do that on Thursday. Tell us how that's going on. And if not, then we'll move over to our next meeting, which will probably be the last week in May, I think. Isn't that when committee days are,
May 24th through 27th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometime during that week, anyway. Have they fixed those three?
They gave the range of the 24th through the 27th.
Okay. You have anything else to guide us on, Madam Administrator?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
Anything else for the good of the order? Thank you all. We are adjourned.
Oh, that was great.